Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today our special guest is Rick Sharga, Executive Vice President for Auction.com. Rick is one of the country's most frequently quoted sources on real estate, mortgage, and foreclosure trends. Rick joined Auction.com, the largest online real estate marketplace, in 2013. Rick's appeared on the CBS Evening News, NBC Nightly News, CNN, ABC World News, CNBC, Fox, Bloomberg, and NPR. Brief government organizations such as the Federal Reserve and Senate Banking Committee, and corporations like J.P. Morgan Chase, Citibank, and Deutsche Bank. Prior to joining Auction.com, Rick was an executive vice president for Carrington Mortgage Holdings, which owns and operates multiple businesses in the mortgage, real estate, and securities industry. Prior to Carrington, Rick spent 8 years at RealtyTrack, where as senior vice president, he was responsible for marketing, business development, and data operations. Rick's a member of various industry organizations. He's on the corporate board of governors of the National Association of Hispanic Real Estate Professionals and a member of the five-star National Mortgage Servicing Association. He serves on the editorial advisory board for Default Servicing News and was included in Inman's Top 100 annual list of the most influential leaders in real estate both in 2013 and 2014. In his spare time, he accomplished getting a black belt in Taekwondo, and Rick spends his spare time continuing his lifelong quest to find the perfect wine to complement his baby back ribs. Rick, welcome to our show.
Thanks, Bruce.
I've taken up barbecuing, and I've really enjoyed it. I find it relaxing in my spare time.
I do too. It's amazing what you can actually get away with barbecuing, and it's not nearly as much work as cooking in the kitchen for some reason.
I know, it's actually fun, and I've acquired a taste for vegetables which I never thought I would get involved in. So it's been fun. You know, Auction.com is actually a pretty amazing success story to me. I used to attend auctions in the 90s, buying HUD repos. And, you know, there's a lot of very established companies, and then Auction.com comes along. And maybe the timing is okay, but still, there was some genius behind capturing the market share that's occurred. And that really is true. And also the converting of the way people thought of, let's say, how you do trustee sales, that type of thing. So it's been an impressive run, watching it from the sidelines. You know, you've got 900 employees, and really you've changed an industry, and that's really a mouthful. Not too many companies ever get to say that.
Well, I appreciate the kind words. I wish I could take credit for more of the company's success. I've only been here for a couple of years, but one of the things that brought me on board was this is a company that has evolved from a kind of traditional offline auction house, although it did change the industry once it entered it. As you mentioned, we sort of jumped way past a lot of established companies at that point. But it's really now a technology-driven enterprise that's really set its goal as becoming more or less the eBay for real estate. And I believe that this real estate market is really one that needs more transparency, much more efficiency, and much better experience for buyers, sellers, agents, and brokers. And I think the kind of technology that we're beginning to deploy is going to enable that.
And what you just brought up is what has never been accomplished before. Normally, auction companies boom during bad times. It starts with, let's auction off the new houses that didn't sell. Uh-oh, here comes a wave of foreclosures. Let's auction those off. Uh-oh, everybody's out of foreclosures. I guess we'll pack up our tent and go home. I mean, auction business has really been a boom and bust thing. And what you're trying to do is say, auction is an acceptable method of sale 24/7, year in and year out. And I don't think that's really been accepted yet by the public. So that's, in essence, what you're trying to do.
Yeah, it's a bet the company strategy. And for me, it was sort of a bet the career risk that I was willing to take, because there are a couple things. One is that I believe personally that 10 years from now, the overwhelming majority of real estate transactions will take place online. We have a new generation of home buyers and sellers coming to market who will demand that. They do everything else online. They've grown up doing that. There's no reason that you can't execute a sale online as long as you provide opportunities for that buyer to take a look at the property, to visit an open house, do building inspections. It's going to be a hybrid model, but there's no reason why you can't finish the transaction online. You can't do your closing paperwork online and just make it, again, a much more transparent, efficient process. That doesn't mean, by the way, that I or we necessarily believe that all of those transactions will be auctions. It's very likely that we're going to see other types of transactions migrate online in addition to auctions. You could have sort of a make-an-offer situation where it becomes more like an offline sale. You could have a buy-it-now button like eBay does on some of their properties.
Okay.
I didn't come to auction.com to watch the last foreclosure roll off the assembly line. What's interesting right now is in our commercial business, half of the assets we bring to auction today are not distressed assets. They are traditional, high-quality, A-grade properties, and we're commanding, very, very good market prices on those. So we're seeing that take place, and we're going to begin testing the waters on the residential side as well. So it's interesting times, as they say.
One of the things that's really changed, when I was looking at the properties in the 90s, I'd get a catalog for HUD, and the information was, there's the address, right? I mean, that was it.
Yep.
And I would run out there and do all the due diligence and everything. Now you go to, auction.com and say, well, I'm interested in this property. And all of a sudden, you can get all the way home almost from your seat. Yeah. On what it is that you're going to be bidding on and what's the status of title. That's been a big change and a really very necessary one for someone that's going to be a repetitive buyer.
You're right. And we've taken a lot of input from investors, probably a lot of people who have studied under you, and deployed the learnings from those conversations with investors into how we execute on the website. What kind of information? We're launching a program we're calling Buy with Confidence shortly, and that actually kind of guarantees an even heightened element of due diligence that's available in our data vaults online. Recently, we sold a two-office building complex in Manhattan Beach for about $96 million. And as you can imagine, people weren't just clicking inadvertently online at bidding in $1 million increments. So there was just copious amounts of information available, leasing contracts and occupancy rates and financial projections and environmental reports. It is not the bad old days of not being able to find any information. And we find this levels the playing field significantly for smaller investors, individual investors. They're not bidding on $96 million properties, but they often don't have the same financial resources that bigger investors do to do that due diligence. And so we try and level the playing field to give them, a lot of the information they need to make an informed buy.
One of the challenges has always been when you make this statement, I have a property for sale and it's going up to auction, and it's like, oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Right.
The assumption is you really must be in trouble. And that's a challenge for what's interesting. Not all countries feel that way about auctions. Some countries have embraced auctions where it's the norm, and we're way behind the curve in that. But the fact that you can do that to commercial, I noticed you had like $192 million month in May, and it was mostly not the distressed owners participating, is kind of a statement to saying, one of the things too you have, and this is really important for an auction company, is how many buyers do you already have in the can, locked and loaded, that are going to look at the next property without any advertising cost to that prospective seller? That's a big deal.
Well, I'll let you in on a little secret. This is one of our magic green crystals that we deploy that a lot of auction companies don't. We have a database of probably between 1 million and 2 million active investors across the country that we market to pretty extensively. A lot of that's email marketing. But we also spend between $30 and $40 million a year advertising properties. And we don't charge the sellers anything for that. That comes out of whatever profits that we take in from the actual transactions. So, you know, the next auction company that wants to come along has to come along with, you know, $40 to $50 million to outspend us in the advertising market. And it's not for the faint of heart, and it's not for people with light wallets. But we've you know, over the years put together a model that allows us to predict with pretty good accuracy if we spend X, we're gonna recoup Y, and as long as we get those numbers right, we're happy to market these properties very, very aggressively on behalf of our sellers. And by the way, that's one of the reasons we get buyers from everywhere. We've had bidders from over 100 countries. Typically, about 70%. Of the properties that we sell on the commercial side are sold to people the broker didn't know before the transaction, and about 65% of the time the buyers from out of state. So it really is a very powerful global marketing engine that's part of the underpinnings of our business.
When you look at those two markets, commercial and residential, which one do you think is ahead of the curve as far as already past the bad times into good times?
Commercial, hands down. It's in full recovery. Our research team just issued a report a few weeks ago that pointed out that in the first quarter of this year, the commercial market set new records in terms of sales volume and sales prices. And all the major sectors of commercial are actually way up. Now, the flip side of that is we're also looking at 10-year lows in terms of cap rates. So people are spending more on these assets in some cases than the underlying fundamentals would necessarily suggest they spend.
Right.
But the cost of capital is so low, and the property sales are taking place at a time when the economy is still improving rather than flatlining. So there's a lot of confidence in the marketplace.
Usually when you have a market that's really known to have passed its down cycle and is now in a healthy cycle, usually financing breaks loose a little bit for that segment. Is that true for the commercial world? Is there financing that more readily available?
No. It's funny you mentioned that because you would expect that to be the case. I would say financing is probably a little looser on the commercial side than it is on the residential side, where things continue to be about twice as difficult as they have been historically to get a loan.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not loose by any means. What we're seeing is a huge influx of foreign capital that's helping to accelerate the marketplace. There is financing available, but it's really to the most qualified buyers on very closely researched properties.
Well, and you know, it's almost, that's a good thing, because now one of the concerns on the commercial world is you have all these billions of dollars of notes that are coming due and payable. And we're really supposed to be in the teeth of that right now. Last 3 years should have been, it's going to be devastating, you know, have all these loans come due and the loans value's down. And now the value is accelerated beyond what people owed. But the fact that they're not getting in with creative financing is healthy. In other words, they're accepting the
yep.
fact that they're buying a 3.5% cap rate, but they're investing their own cash, and the lender is participating at a level that makes probably a lot of sense.
You nailed it. And yes, there was a lot of speculation that we were going to see the CMBS wall, as people were calling it, crumble and flood the market with distressed properties. But both on the commercial side and increasingly on the residential side, distressed assets are making up a smaller and smaller percentage of overall sales. And we don't see that changing anytime in the foreseeable future.
No, you don't have any of the elements that would cause another uptick in foreclosures. Now, one thing that's really kind of amazing to me in the residential sector, you have California, who's, you know, long past its peak in foreclosures and now approximating, a year or two away from usually the bottom of foreclosures. And you go to Florida and look in that chart, And it looks like 2010 in California. And I guess that's just the way the laws were different and how long it took to foreclose on a property.
Well, you're not wrong. The California market has recovered, and as it recovered, a lot of assets, a lot of homes that might have gone into foreclosure were sold otherwise. And so that the fact that the market was accelerating here more rapidly actually helped the recovery and helped prevent a lot of foreclosures that might have otherwise have happened. Florida hasn't recovered nearly as well. In Florida, it's still taking, on average, over 900 days to execute a foreclosure. And so you have just an enormous backlog. The court systems got backed up there. There was a lot of fraud going on, both in the lending side and also in the foreclosure processes itself. Robo signing there, and law firms doing things they weren't supposed to do, and the whole system just got completely gummed up. We are starting to see more foreclosure activity in Florida, but like other states, New York, New Jersey, Chicago, Illinois, Maryland, where there are significant backlogs, almost all of the loans in foreclosure were issued before 2010.
Right.
So these are all loans that really probably should have been foreclosed on a couple of years ago. It's not like we're seeing a new wave of foreclosure activity. This is a long delayed wave that's finally working its way through the system.
And the thing that all of those states have in common is they were judicial states. So the process was much more cumbersome anyway.
Yep.
Okay. The buyer, the foreign buyer, are they participating equally in commercial purchases as they are residential in pockets?
Equally is a tough word to use in this case. They're very aggressive.
Are they market makers, I guess, would be the overall question.
In rare instances, there was a Chinese group that bought the Waldorf Astoria.
Exactly.
In New York.
Exactly.
And they broke all sorts of records when they did that.
Right.
You wonder a little bit if this is a repeat of Japan buying Rockefeller Center some years back. But I don't think it would be fair to say that they're market makers across the board. I think there are instances. In fact, one of the things that we've noticed is some of the international buyers have moved away from top-tier markets like New York and L.A. and San Francisco. You're starting to work on markets in the Midwest and the Southeast as prices have escalated. So, rather than continue with the bidding wars, they're moving, looking for assets in other parts of the country that are a little bit more affordable. So U.S. real estate, both commercial and residential, is viewed by a lot of international investors as being a much safer play than other available alternatives.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly with all the stuff going on relative to the euro. The Chinese stock market has had two crashes in 3 weeks. and interestingly, instead of a pullback from China, we're seeing more activity from potential Chinese investors who are looking for something that's a safer hedge than their own stock market.
Interesting. Well, it'll be very interesting to see how that plays out, because you're right, as far as the amount of money that could disappear, from their market. And Japan had the same thing. They had a booming stock market that translated into real estate commercial purchases and so forth and so on. So,
well, one big difference, though, is that the Chinese stock market really doesn't have the same influence on the investor in China that Japan did or that the U.S. does. Only about 20% of equity is invested in stocks in China, so it's not quite as big a play. And probably the investor who will be most challenged is going to be the individual investor,
mm-hmm.
Who was not driving most of the investment money that was coming into U.S. real estate, because the Chinese government made it hard for that individual to get money out of the country. So it could just be that mid-tier, larger-tier investor, the institutional investors, will continue to funnel money outside of the country, and we won't see the same sort of immediate drop. Now, if the stock market keeps crashing in China, all bets are off, but at least that's what it looks like right now.
The habits of investors that are buying properties, how has that transitioned over the last year?
Interesting question, Bruce. We've seen a pretty significant movement over the last year toward flipping. And that's particularly true in markets like California, where home prices have soared to the point where it's sort of hard to buy a property and make money renting it, and also where inventory levels have dropped to ridiculously tight numbers. And so, you know, a flipper who knows what he's doing or she's doing can buy a property at a little bit of a discount, spend a little bit of money tidying the place up, and sell it at a profit pretty quickly. So we're seeing many more investors who at least initially plan to flip a property than those who plan to buy and hold. And that it's almost counterintuitive, because one of the other trends we're all seeing is home ownership rates continue to decline as more people opt to rent. So you'd almost think we'd see more and more people deciding to become landlords. And at least on a percentage basis among the people that we survey every month, we're just not seeing that groundswell of activity toward properties being bought to rent out.
Well, the other thing that's really emerged in the last couple of years is the available financing for doing just that, holding rentals.
You're absolutely right. And we're seeing more and more, let's call it creative financing, aimed at smaller investors. It started with some of the big hedge funds offering financing for people that plan to buy and hold properties as rental units. But we're also now seeing a lot of bridge lending that's coming out and really isn't dependent on the investor claiming they're going to rent the property. There's a lot of financing available today for flippers as well as for renters.
You know, one thing you just said was the percentage of people owning their own home is, I read the article, forget the exact number, but it's like over 40 years ago, we're now tied with that number. Yeah. Do you think that the people in Washington that make policies are looking at that saying, well, good, job well done, or we've gone too far?
I can't imagine a politician saying, yep, fewer people own homes. We've accomplished our mission, especially not with an election year coming up. No, I think this is partly unintended consequences of some government programs. I do think there are more people in Washington today who recognize that the policies of the past several administrations that were aimed at making everybody a homeowner probably overshot the mark when we got to 70% home ownership. It really meant that probably a very high number of those homeowners were actually renters. They just didn't know it at the time.
Right.
But I don't think there's been a conscious movement from politicians to drop the home ownership rates. I think it's been more an economic reality as people lost jobs, lost wages, as a new generation of home buyers has decided to delay entrance into the marketplace for economical reasons. I think there's a little bit of a psychological hangover from the boom and bust. Generation X had the highest home ownership rates of any generation. They unfortunately timed it very badly. They had that high ownership rate when the market crashed. A lot of them are scarred, may never come back. And then you have the mortgage lending policies that the government put in place, which for better or for worse, has made it virtually impossible for marginal borrowers to get into the market. So it's been a combination of things. I don't think we've bottomed out yet. I've been saying for the past year and a half, I believe home ownership rates will probably get all the way down to about 62% before they bottom out and bounce back. I think we'll ultimately wind up closer to 64%, which has been our historic norm. But I think just the growing number of households and the fact that a huge percentage of those households are populated by people who will have a hard time qualifying for a conventional mortgage are going to drive us to lower home ownership rates before it's all said and done.
Well, Rick, we're out of time. We've been speaking with Rick Sharga, and Executive Vice President of Auction.com. Check out their site. And Rick, great talking with you once again.
Always a pleasure, Bruce. Thanks for having me.
Okay, you bet.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.